Betsy DeVos was so bad on 60 Minutes, she ended up on Saturday Night Live. Is it real or is it parody? We will have a little of both. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
Surprise! We actually have something new trending in education news today. Bonnie is not here, but hey, like any good classroom, we have great substitutes. And substituting for Bonnie on news today, Stick, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hey, I love a good substitute. Now, obviously, we're not paying you nearly enough, because if we did, you wouldn't be a good substitute, because substitutes have to get crappy pay.
That's true.
Okay, so just make sure everybody out there understands we're paying you poorly to do this.
Yeah, I got paid in M&M's.
Okay, M&M's, good. We like to make sure that you get a full arrangement of M&M's the next time you substitute. But that will be contingent on how well you do today.
Okay.
Speaking of how well people do, Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education. It's now 2 weeks in the news, and she just can't seem to keep herself out. But coming off of the 60 Minutes interview with Leslie Stahl, where some people would say she was less than stellar.
Well, I think the problem is that the words that were coming out of my mouth were bad, and that is because they came from my brain.
In fact, you know, we're looking at CNN, and people laid this out, but, you know, Betsy DeVos is big issue, and she had a tough time answering this question, was when Leslie hit her over the head with school choice. Betsy, your idea that taking money from schools that, quote, are failing, giving them to kids so that they can leave, that will then make those failing schools get better. The evidence in your home state of Michigan, where you've done this now for 20 years, is that they don't get any better. And Betsy had a great answer of,
yeah,
well, I've never been there.
Yeah.
I mean, what does a substitute news person make of that?
Well, it made me laugh.
Okay.
Because, I mean, like, it's silly to think that you're going to take funds away from schools and they're going to get better. I don't understand how taking money away from something makes it a better place for learning.
Well, you obviously haven't studied Economics 101.
No, I didn't.
Oh, see.
I went to radio school.
You went to... Oh,
we didn't cover economics.
So you are truly one of the emergency substitute teachers that we typically use in schools right now, which you actually don't have any real knowledge of what you're talking about.
If that's how that works, then yes, yeah.
But no, it's the simple market. It's competition. You've heard of competition. Customers will go where they get the best product.
That's true.
Okay. And so if children and parents are customers of education, they, if given the money, will leave bad schools and pick good schools. Okay. That's one part of the equation. The All other right. side of that equation is, therefore, then the bad schools that the students leave, they will get better, because in a market to get the customers to come back, they'll improve.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense,
and
right?
Does it work in the schools, though?
And that's the question. And actually, it's not even really the question, because the answer now is, we've been doing choice and charters and trying to get students to go over here to see if they get a better education because they were, quote, in a failing school over there. And as Leslie Stahl pointed out time and time again, particularly in Michigan, Betsy DeVos's home state, where she has spent literally millions of our own money to make this happen, the evidence keeps showing that choice and charter schools do no better than the local public schools in which they take funding away from. So even when the public schools are defunded, they still, this is a different way to look at it. Nobody ever talked about this. They still maintain their own even when they're losing funding.
So they lose funding and they still perform.
Not great, right?
Because, but they're still performing.
They're still, right. And when these students leave the schools, though, they go and they don't perform better. And so this is this issue, this kind of simplistic market-based idea. And I said, you know what? Be honest.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here. People that believe in charters and choice really aren't looking for what's best for kids. They don't like the idea of taxation in public schools. In fact, when you get real honest people, they'll be like, look, I don't want my tax money going to no damn government school. At least there's honesty there,
yeah.
Right? I don't know. Maybe Betsy's not capable of honesty. The other thing, though, they talk about school violence.
Yeah.
Right? And the Department of Ed secretary, the Secretary of Education, mm-hmm. right, is now going to be leading the task force to make our schools safer.
I did read about that.
Yeah. And she's got this great idea. No option is off the table.
And I love that.
Right?
It sounds great.
There's if you've got an option stick, we want to hear it.
All right. Let's see here. I remember when I was in school.
How did you feel safe when you were in school?
I didn't feel unsafe at school when I was in school.
Oh, you must not have gone to the right school then. Because most... Okay, so you don't have any experience with this, but what does...
I had a bomb go off in my cafeteria when I was in school.
Okay, so bomb-sniffing dogs then. That's an option.
I love dogs.
So you'd be okay with bomb-sniffing dogs?
Can I pet the dog in the hallway?
I don't know if they're pettable or not. I don't know, like maybe when you pet them, they can't smell bombs anymore.
If you can like interact with the dogs while they're sweeping, sure.
So you're good with bomb sniffing. Okay, so there's an option that's on the table because all options are on the table. So bomb sniffing dogs.
I mean, I went to a school that had police on site during the day. Drug sniffing dogs in my high school wasn't uncommon.
Okay.
I mean, those dogs were cool.
Right.
Why not have a bomb-sniffing dog?
Okay, so we'll go with that. One of the more controversial ones, though, that if all options are on the table, mm-hmm. one option, though, that keeps coming up is should we give teachers the ability to pack or, as they say, have a loaded gun ready to take out an immediate threat? Should teachers? And I love her answer.
She had a good one.
Well, that's up to not me, the states and the local municipalities to make that decision if they think it's the right decision for them.
It's kind of a default.
Well, and it's, wait a minute. And she's said this on numerous times about numerous education policies. It's not my decision. Okay, wait a minute. You are the Secretary of Education.
That's for the highest rank.
For this, right. It is your responsibility.
We are working hard to ensure that all schools are safe learning environments for guns.
I don't know. Secretary of Education DeVos, she's got some issues. She didn't do well on 60 Minutes. And from what I understand, she didn't do so well on Saturday Night Live either. So
it was a good one this weekend.
It was a good one. So, hey, Stick, you know what, though? I tell you what, I think next time I will bring you back with peanut M&Ms.
Ooh, peanut M&Ms. You might get more than 30 words out of me.
Super. Betsy on 60 Minutes was a total debacle. Or was it? We are speaking with so-called Assistant Associate Vice Provost of Statistics for the Betsy DeVos campaign, Earl Eggett. And Earl is calling because he says that the media is purposely distorting Betsy's appearance on 60 Minutes and that she had her facts right. And so you being a statistical fact guy, Earl, you're here to dispute the facts. What are your disputes?
Well, how you doing there, Dr. Sleekar? My name's Earl V. Edgett. They call me Double E. Okay.
All right.
I watched that show and I was appalled about how they treated my lady, Betsy DeVos. Okay. And how are you doing up there breaking them pencils? You know, you say there ain't no dang money going on, but you're breaking pencils. Why don't you change the name of that show to Sharpening Pencils or Organizing Pencils or Passing Out Pencils? You know, you want to put a kid to work, you make them pass it out. That's what you do. But anyway, I'm watching that show with our national treasure, Miss Betsy DeVos.
She is a national treasure, that's for sure, just depending on what your treasure chest is filled with.
Well, I tend to get excited when I talk about Miss DeVos, because back in 1982, I took my wife Trudy on our first date. We went and saw this movie, Tootsie. Okay? Loved that movie. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see the end of the movie. I only saw about three quarters of that movie. But I fell in love with the actress that played Tootsie. Now, she was one hot tamale. I ain't never seen her in no other movie, but the next best thing was when the first time I saw Betsy DeVos, I thought, by golly, there she is, Tootsie, once again.
All right, so let's get back to Tootsie's problem with statistics. Leslie Stahl put it right in front of her face saying, Betsy, you make claims such as that when you defund public schools get better because they have to compete. And then when asked for evidence of that happening in her home state of Michigan, your Tootsie, Betsy DeVos, was short on the answer. In fact, I'm not sure what answer there was given other than I need to look into that. If you're going to dispute that, I'd like to know how you would like to dispute Tootsie for us.
Okay, let me tell you a little story about Betsy DeVos and how she's a true American. She's a true representative of the Rhino Party, which I am a member of, by golly. She came from nothing. Let me tell you something. She was so poor, her parents couldn't even afford to send her to public school. You know, when you got a lot of money, you like to take it out in the public and show it off. They had nothing. She couldn't even go to no public school. They had to put her off into some private place away from our regular kids. So right then and there, I see where she's coming from. And second of all, let me tell you a little story about Betsy DeVos. They asked her too many damn questions on that show. How are you supposed to answer it? And another thing, how's she going to check up on all them kids? She ain't got their passwords.
Well, I'm pretty sure that the Secretary of Education, even being the Secretary of Education, is not allowed to have passwords of public school students. So if you're asking for Betsy, or as you call her, Tootsie, to have password access to the public schools in America, I think that could be a problem. All right, look, we're not going to get anywhere on the statistics on school choice. What about guns, though? She right away jumps in and says, you know what, if states and teachers and local people decide that we want to give teachers guns, she's good with that. And a lot of people said, wait a minute. And so, Earl, interpret her answer for us.
Well, when she was at her confirmation hearing, she hit it right on the head when she brought up the topic of grizzly bears. Mm. Now, by golly, you need a gun to kill a grizzly bear if you're in there doing your language arts or something, and all of a sudden you look outside, Smokey, it's bear, it ain't Smokey the bear. It's a grizzly bear, for God's sake. Now, I can remember when I was a kid, everybody in school had a rifle in their gun rack, and that was just because we'd go hunting after school.
Now, I'm sure I want to make sure that people have that visual. So in your 4x4 car or truck, you had a loaded shotgun pointed towards your head as you were driving, right?
I had a lot more than that, Sunshine. Let me tell you something, Snowflake. I had all kinds of stuff in there, because who knows what you was going to run into on the way home, okay?
Okay, so...
You know, something like that happened in my school.
Yeah, but wait...
Something happened in my school.
I go outside. I don't want to get into whether or not we should be shooting grizzly bears if they're attacking schools. That could be a problem. She's talking about whether we should be giving guns to teachers to shoot potential threats, and I want to get off of grizzly bears and go back to the reality of the fact that she might be supportive of this or she's not supportive. I can't tell. And you being the associate assistant vice provost to her statistics or whatever title it is that you gave us, you should have information about where she stands on giving guns to teachers.
Well, you know what? You forget about that big title. You say you can just call me Double E, like everybody down at the shop and up at Roy's Highway Tavern. They just call me Double E, so save your breath.
All right, we'll keep
it. Go ahead.
No, I said we'll keep it a Double E then.
The only time I ever brought a gun into school was when I was having trouble with my firing pin. And my home ec teacher, Miss Hightower, right in the middle of her Cherry's Jubilee, she grabbed that thing, she fixed it for me. And so she was knowledgeable about guns. Now, you don't need to know much about them guns. You just need to know point and shoot. It's like one of them throwaway cameras, for God's sake.
All right. So again, no answer really on the guns. Let's take one last spot where she feels that she is unfairly. In fact, I think this is why you decided to call in, that she is unfairly treated and that she sometimes her feelings get hurt when she shows up at schools and students boo her.
Well, we all make mistakes, Dr. Sleekar. That's all I can say. And Betsy, she's more human than any of us. She gets in there, and I think maybe, you know, people get the wrong impression about her. She knows what she's doing. Like I said, she's a true American, came from nothing, had so less money she had to go to private school because she couldn't afford them public kids. So maybe that's the whole thing. I don't know. And maybe, you know, maybe they don't like her shoes or something. I have no idea. But to me, she's the greatest gift to the education system I've ever seen.
Well, Double E, we will, I guess, allow you to make that claim, and we'll let the Busted Pencils listeners make a determination as to whether there's any validity there. Associate Assistant Vice Provost to Betsy DeVos's Statisticians, Earl Eckert, E or Double E, as they say. I know you don't like me busting pencils, so I might as well say, hey, dude, man, go ahead out and sharpen some pencils and call us another time.
Okay, I'll be down on Route 59 publicly supporting Miss DeVos, me and my two dogs. Actually, there'll be four dogs out there, but only two of them's mine. So come on down there and talk to me if you want to really get involved with this movement to promote how awesome Betsy DeVos is. Amen, brother.
There it is, Double E on Busted Pencils.
This is Busted Pencils from Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
Educated educators. Talking Education, Busted Pencils Radio.
He is Associate Professor of Education at Furman University of South Carolina, and he is the author of Radical Eyes for Equity, the blog. Welcome back to Busted Pencils, Paul Thomas.
Thank you for having me.
So, Paul, Betsy DeVos dilemma. Come on. Everybody's getting on Betsy for her 60 minutes and, you know, how horrible she is. And you decide in this piece here to go, hold on, we need to kind of remember what made or who made Betsy possible.
Right. Yeah. The reason I think it's a dilemma is because, without a doubt, her performance and her being appointed and virtually anything she does is deplorable. Mm-hmm. So certainly I have no problem with people criticizing. The thing I've been struggling with is since Trump was elected, there's been a push to make this whole administration exceptional in the context of sort of mainstream party politics. And it's in terms of policy and even in terms of some of the discourse and the narratives, it really is pretty mainstream, especially education, whether it's Democrat or Republican. I spent just about the entire 8 years of the Obama administration blogging, writing scholarly pieces, strongly criticizing the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan,
right,
the way that Obama talked about education. And to be perfectly honest, I thought that the Obama education 8 years were even worse than the George W. Bush.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people talk about that. In fact, though, I mean, you do even hit on that and go back into the Bush administration with helping us remember Rod Paige.
Yes, exactly. And I think people never – it's a failure of the mainstream media, but the Texas miracle was discredited by scholars in Texas after Rod Paige – moved to Secretary of Education, and virtually nobody covered that. So it was falsified information. It was pretty much a manufactured miracle. And that was the blueprint for No Child Left Behind. And, you know, throughout the Bush, you know, Margaret Spellings, horrible. And she has parlayed that stint into being president of the University of North Carolina.
Yeah, how'd that happen? I mean, and then that's a whole other 10-minute discussion. We won't get there. But so, yeah, so you go Rod Paige, Margaret Spellings, and then Next up, as you said, one of our favorite, Arnie Duncan, and then a short stint with one more before Betsy.
John King.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of called on the carpet about John King, and I feel like that was pretty fair. And I don't think I spent a whole lot of time criticizing John King, and I certainly think the best thing that came out of the Obama administration was elevating the Office of Civil Rights. Mm-hmm. And I think John King and Obama did a nice job, more than a nice job, did something that we should be supporting in drawing attention to inequitable discipline policies and other, you know, race-based inequities in the school system. But what still bothers me is King made his reputation running a no-excuses charter school that practiced the exact policies that he was speaking against as Secretary of Education.
Yeah, I mean, and as you said, I mean, we certainly do want to recognize the elevated stature to race-based discipline policies that have been horrendous. But then it is interesting that, as you point out very, very well, that, you know, John King made his mark by, quote, using these same discipline techniques. But back to Betsy, though, I mean, when you lay this out like that, I mean, you know, so we take Rod Page, and then from Rod Page we go to Margaret Spellings, and then from Margaret Spellings we go to Arnie Duncan, and then from Arnie Duncan we go to John King, and then all of a sudden we have Betsy DeVos, and it's like all of a sudden now people are waking up and going, wow, we have this horrible Secretary of Education. And your piece, though, is kind of saying, hold on, yeah, she's horrible and deplorable, but Where was the, or maybe this is a question, are you saying, where was the press for these other atrocious people?
Right. My argument all along with the Trump administration has been that the problem was not fake news, it's mainstream media. And the New York Times and NPR right now, still, while they're, you know, trying to promote themselves as the alternative to fake news, they're not coming to grips with their bad journalism and their lazy journalism. And throughout, these whole, you know, administrations that you've just been mentioning, it's been the same sort of problems by not confronting them, media has facilitated just horrible policy and allowed people to make promises and use sort of this grandiose rhetoric. And I think that's what the difference is. Trump and DeVos, Ben Carson, some others are ham-fisted. They just don't know how to speak in public. So they're more crass, and they're more blunt, and they fumble more. Mm-hmm. But that is, I think, a condemnation of us. That means that the people before them were skirting by because they were slick. And I do think, starting with Rod Page, it created the environment that made Betsy DeVos possible. If you look carefully at the very beginning of the Obama administration, was this David Brooks Harlem Renaissance love fest with charter schools. Mm-hmm. And that was just as unfounded, and it was just as over the top, and it was just as harmful as the Betsy DeVos more extreme sort of privatization push. But it was David Brooks, who seems like he's reasonable, and it was Obama, who seems like he's reasonable, and it's Arnie Duncan, who seems like he's reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, and the reality is, as you just point out, and, you know, Arnie Duncan, there wasn't a choice in charter movement, I think, almost over the 8 years that he didn't want to grab onto. And so when Betsy DeVos goes on 60 Minutes and talks about charters and choice, and finally Leslie Stahl, one person, decides to go, hey, guess what? Have you checked the evidence in your own home state on charters and choice? The fact is that question should have been asked 16 years ago.
Yep, exactly. Or even farther.
Or even further, right. I mean, you and I could take that back further. And so, right, we want to make sure people understand we're not defending Betsy DeVos, But we are pointing out the fact, and this is why I would really require any listener to Busted Pencils to go to Radical Eyes for Equity and take a look at Paul Thomas's piece on Betsy DeVos called The Betsy DeVos Dilemma, to look at this and really go, you know, hey, she's horrible. But, you know, the horrible stage has been set. It's just that nobody has ever really decided to call people on it until, like, as you just said, maybe we have people now that aren't so eloquent, and they say things that it's much easier to call them on. But charters and choice and privatization, I mean, hey, you know, it was the basis of No Child Left Behind and Arne Duncan, and so it's been going through there. So anybody who's surprised by this, it's surprising that they're surprised.
Right, and I can complain like I'm complaining while also saying better late than never. Like, if we're going to finally start calling people for evidence, I'm all for it. Like, this would be a great transition, but I don't know. You know, the Leslie Stahl interview might be a one-hit wonder. I don't know that anybody else is doing that. Most people are focusing on just how unfit for the position she is. They're just kind of piling on to her being incompetent, which I think is misplaced also. Sure, she's incompetent, but Arne Duncan had no background in education.
Right.
He's a crony appointee. So the problem is really it's the policy. It's where money is going to be spent. It's what schools are going to be closed. It's the children that are going to be cheated. So I'm just not that focused on her incompetence because she fits in a long line of incompetent secretaries of education.
Well, the blog is Radical Eyes for Equity, and we are talking specifically about the Betsy DeVos Dilemma. And Paul Thomas, thank you for busting pencils with us again today.
Thank you.
She's a Madison West High School graduate and elementary education major, teacher, lived in Texas, is a school board member. She's also a mom. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Anna Moffitt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Anna, one of the things, and I see you on social media quite a bit, and you're a mom, but you're an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like this area, particularly special education, is a passion of yours. What's that? Where's that come from?
Sure. Well, it comes from a lot of different places. I think first and foremost, it comes because my son has a significant disability. He is diagnosed with autism.
Okay.
He's 10. So I've had 10 years of kind of living in the land of special education, health and human services, all of that.
I don't know what that's like. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're first of all, as a parent,
mm-hmm.
what's that like?
You know, I think as a parent, I can say there's definitely challenges,
mm-hmm.
But also being a parent of a child with a significant disability, I think that it's really changed the trajectory of where I was going in life. I think it's made me a much better person, individual. It's really, I mean, my son Felix has taught me a tremendous amount
mm-hmm.
About just being patient and putting in hard work.
And so now, you know, move that though, and your son eventually has to go to school, and you're in the public schools in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And in America, we have what we say is a full inclusion model. However, mm-hmm. does that mean that your son always gets what they need?
I think it's a real big challenge.
Okay.
You know, I believe my son is getting what he needs.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really taken, it's like a full-time job initially, working with schools to get things in place. Mm-hmm. The supports that schools have, the staff and the resources is inadequate. So mm-hmm. I think there's some competition there of where you're going to put your resources, and that's a challenge. So I don't think all kids have my son's experience.
Well, and so your advocacy as a parent here mm-hmm. working in, let's just say right now, in collaboration with the school,
mm-hmm.
even that is not as easy as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to go back what you just said, though. In fact, the schools we know are required by law to work with any student that comes, right?
Public schools.
Public schools, right? We know mm-hmm. that. But the reality, and this is not a cut on public schools, I think this is more the issue when you say the challenges that you face as a parent, the schools already face preparing to work with your child or any child with special needs.
Right.
The reality of the setting in which they're going is they don't have what they need, you said.
Absolutely not. And that has been a struggle that folks in the disability community have been fighting for so many years. I mean, when the federal government passed IDEA, the Individuals with Disability Education Act, there was a promise to fully fund that at the state and federal level. Mm-hmm. And here we are decades later, and we're not even close to fully funding IDEA. And because we're not getting the funding from the state and local government, it's falling onto school districts, right, and the local districts. And it's a significant cost. I mean, down the road, it does pay out as far as having individuals coming into the community with skills and education, but up front, the costs are significant.
And that shouldn't be a reason why we say we shouldn't do it, because mm-hmm. if we look at, and let's move into this idea, some people would say, well, it's a special needs child. They should be in a special school where they mm-hmm. should get the special things that they want. Mm-hmm. Like, no, there's an issue here, too, of what we're saying of inclusion and right. the benefit, not just to the special needs child, but right. to society as a whole, that individuals with disabilities are our neighbors. Mm-hmm. There are sons, there are daughters, there are cousins. And so the idea of fully included in a classroom is just a societal issue that we should be striving for. But now come back to, we say, so we passed the law, mm-hmm. Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. We need funding, though, right. to make that. And tough job the teachers in schools have when it comes to dealing with special needs. Mm-hmm. How do we get there, though? I know it's probably an impossible question, but
right.
I mean, what are we going to get there? Or is your advocacy something you see, something that's going to just...
It's hard to say. I don't know how much. I mean, I think people have been asking for full funding for years, and every year it gets pulled out of the budget. And although I have to say there have been some additional investments in certain areas of disability, I mean, in particular, mental health, I think, is getting more attention right now as folks in office are kind of trying to pull our attention away from common sense gun laws. It's, well, let's just talk about mental health. Right. So we're seeing some funds come in that way, but across like all areas, we don't have sufficient funding. I think for me, what I try to focus on, again, is like looking at how we can collaborate with other outside entities to maybe bring in some additional funding. I mean, we still show up and we keep asking, but until it's fully funded, we have to be working with other groups and individuals. I think the other thing that gets lost in the conversation around inclusive education is that our kids with disabilities are really kind of getting hit twice as hard, because when you make flat cuts across public education as a whole, and then you have cuts in special education, it's really cutting that kids' education twice.
Wait, cuts in special education? I thought we passed a law decades ago that said we were going to fully fund, which was never actualized anyway, mm-hmm. but now we're also cutting special education on top of not fully funding the original act itself.
I think what it is the funding is staying flat at what okay. we're getting, but what we're seeing is kids are coming into the schools with greater needs. And so it's not per se a cut, because by law there's a lot of stuff in special education, but you can't like flat out cut things, but you can use lots of other mechanisms to cut costs, like not identifying kids that should be receiving special education services, doing something called clustering, which has been really detrimental, where we have classrooms that can be up to 50% kids with IEPs mm. with one aide.
It's an individual education plan.
Yep, individual education plan.
For every student with a special need. And so 50%. Mm-hmm. And so I'm at second grade. I used to be a second grade teacher. Mm-hmm. I had 29 students my first year. One had an IEP.
Right.
So now you're saying there are teachers, and I've met them now too, that are out there in that classroom. So a classroom of 25, where 12 to 13 of them are IEPs, and those IEPs then between the 12 to 13 could have disabilities on a continuum of a range. And so now I'm a classroom teacher, and this is where we talk about the resources. Somebody else though might hear that and say, well, that's just not right. Why are we doing it then? If we're not going to do it right, you know, this is not fair to the kid. This is not fair to the teacher. This is not fair to the special education assistant. We're not doing this right. We should stop doing it. And I know that's not the answer, but I've heard people say, well, then why are we doing these things if they're not best?
Well, I mean, I think the question would then be back, why are we not doing it right?
Okay.
So, and I think that goes back to some of the attitudes and biases that people have around disability and mental health. Okay. And so, I mean, I think we really have to challenge folks on thinking, why do you think my son doesn't deserve a high quality education in his neighborhood school?
And so back to advocacy. It's your job.
Right.
As a parent.
And my job professionally.
And your job professionally.
I advocate for other families.
But so that's, as of now then, as we're going here in 2017, as the parent of a special needs student, though, your need for advocacy will continue.
Oh, yeah. It's an everyday thing. And I think sometimes, I've even heard people say, like, well, of course they have to advocate every day. You know, their kid has an IEP. They should be expected to advocate. And to me, that's interesting because why is it the expectation that our families should be out there every day just asking for the things that kids get? Any old kid would get any old playing time, but it's somehow special for our kids.
Right. So you need to advocate, but me, it's fine. My son gets what they need. My daughter gets what they need. But you, special needs parent, your job is to continually advocate.
And I think the other thing I have to point out about the law, which really goes back to my point about biases, is if you look at the law, what it says in the law is that students with IEPs or students with disabilities have to have a free and appropriate public education. And there was a big case that went down last year. If I talk about other kids without an IEP, they get the best education or an excellent education. And we have actually put into like law in the writing that you don't get the best education. You get what we deem is appropriate.
It's appropriate. And then right there is the whole problem, because what is appropriate
exactly.
And all the definitions. Well, Anna Moffitt, parent advocate, thanks for busting pencils with us today.
You're welcome.
From Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
Educated educators. Talking education. Busted Pencils Radio.
He is the founder and primary writer of Starts With a Bang. He's got books out there, Treknology and Beyond the Galaxy. He is Busted Pencils' own astrophysicist. Welcome back to the show, Ethan Siegel.
Tim, it's my pleasure to be here. Let's see what pencils need busting today.
There's always some pencil that needs to be busted, and when I really want to bust one, I know where to go to. It is astrophysicist Ethan Siegel. Ethan, though, you know, we're going to go back to something you wrote in Forbes a little bit ago, but not that far. Trump's proposed fiscal year 2019 budget to gut NASA, astrophysics, destroying cutting-edge science, and I'll just throw this in there, it's not in the title, doomsday for science education. Go ahead,
Ethan.
I
stand behind that 100%. You know, every year, the president, whoever it is, gets the opportunity to propose to Congress, hey, here's what I want the budget to be. Now, you have to recognize there are certain things that we have in this budget that aren't for the immediate return, but that are long-term plans. Some of them are longer-term plans than any one presidency. Things like what NASA does, we make a flagship mission for NASA, and we get one. We get one flagship mission for like NASA astrophysics every 10 years. This is something where, you know, for example, they had the 2010 decadal review. People started in the 2000s, like in the decade, the 2000s, proposing, planning, what should the flagship mission for the 2020s be? And they proposed them in 2010. The committee, the panel made a decision. And then in the 2020s, that's when construction and everything starts, and then it will be launched in the 2020s. Now, 10 years prior to that, we had the decadal review in the year 2000 for the 2010s mission. That's going to be the James Webb Space Telescope. What happens for these missions, you know, the one that was launched in 1990, that's the Hubble Space Telescope. That's everyone's favorite. That's the most famous one.
Right.
You get these things. This is a collaboration across the field of thousands of astronomers coming together saying, this is the biggest thing that we need. This is the most important thing for the overwhelming majority of the field. And that's where we decide as a group, as a team, to put this all together. Thomas Zurbuchen, he's the head of the Astrophysics Division of NASA's Science Mission Directorate. And he called these flagship missions, he called it civilization-scale science. At the AAS meeting, the annual American Astronomical Society meeting, just last month, he said, this is civilization-scale science. If we don't do this, we're not NASA. And lo and behold, when Trump made his proposal for the 2019 fiscal year, he wants to kill WFIRST. He wants to remove all NASA funding for it. This is not something that just harms one particular mission. This is something that is a slap in the face to the entire scientific community. In addition to the other things in the budget, canceling of five NASA Earth Science missions, including canceling funding for continued operation of an operational satellite that's already up there. This is just a slap in the face to climate scientists and to those interested in things like accurate weather forecasting. And then you can look at the other things being slashed in the budget. The Department of Education is facing 17 independent cuts. Just in that one department, the Department of Energy, the Chemical Safety Board, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts, all of these are going away. Why? It's not to save money. If he wanted to save money, he would have come up with a different tax plan. If he wanted to save money, he wouldn't be promising more money to the military. No, what this is a very straightforward attack on intellectualism in our society. And as someone who cares about education, what we know, how we know it, and the future of humanity, there's no way to just stand by and let this happen. But the good news is, this budget is not set in stone. It's not the final word. You have to get congressional approval to have a budget, to have a budget pass. So this is something where calling your congressmen, calling your senators, writing to them, showing up, this is where we get to make a difference. These missions that are being axed or proposed to being axed, it's only a proposal.
Well, and that's the part. I mean, everything you just said, I don't think people realize the long-term actual effect that this will have if they do go through, because of the amount of harm that will just ripple across the time. But then as you just said, this is not a money-saving thing, because anybody who's looked at the pie graph of, quote, the NASA budget and the contribution that the federal government gives, you know, it's like barely a sliver of red that you can even see to begin with. And so, as you just said, Ethan, this isn't saving any money. This isn't fiscal conservatism. This is truly attacking intellectualism. And as we do here on education, on Busted Pencils Education, we don't like the attack on intellectualism. In fact, we like to protect the whole idea that being educated is actually kind of cool. And so this idea particularly then, what's its effect on science education?
Oh, man. I mean, look, when some people were kids, I'm even too young for this. In the 1960s, when we were in the heyday of the space race, NASA's budget was a maximum of about 4 or 5% of the entire federal budget. today, NASA's funding level is 0.3%
right.
of the federal budget. We invest less than one-tenth of what we used to invest in NASA today. And people are talking about now cutting even that. So when you ask, well, what comes out of NASA anyway? If you look at the spin-off technologies that came from the Apollo program, they don't just include things like Teflon or a space pen. These include firefighting technologies, insulated foam. These include, what we call space-age materials. These are things for heating and cooling. These are things that we use in our everyday life. You can find them in your house. You can find them in your car. You talk about things like GPS, things like the internet, things like satellites, things like cell phones. All of these technologies came about directly because of NASA. Now, I can't predict the future for you. I don't know what groundbreaking technologies are going to come about as a result of what we're researching and developing today, but I can guarantee for you that if we don't invest in them, if we cut the funding off from them down to zero, and we stop developing this basic research, if we stop doing this fundamental research, we're not going to have these future technologies. That is a recipe for stagnation.
Well, I mean, the one, I guess, good thing if I'm on a curriculum committee is that I won't have to buy any new science books because the advances will stop and we can just stop publishing new discoveries then. So that's not a good thing.
You'll have the same unanswered questions that you have today 40, 50 years from now. It's incredible. If you look at the progression of human history, we spent tens of thousands of years in the agricultural age, where agriculture was the most advanced thing we had. We spent hundreds of years in the steam age. But if you look at the 20th century, we powered through the atomic age, the space age, the information age. This century could house developments that are tremendous in nanotechnology, in quantum computing. We can start using things like electrons to store where a single electron could store a bit of information. Imagine how powerful a computer you could have with a mole of electrons in them. So, you're talking about things like we could not have to change the curriculum. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But who wants to be, running a science curriculum where the most advanced thing in there is how a pendulum works? I could have made that same argument in the year 1600, and you would have said, oh, sounds good to me. We got Copernicus and everything. Look at how advanced we are. Well, you can say that, but come on. This is civilization. This is humanity. There's over 7 billion of us. We know we can do better than this. It's time to advance. It's time to step forward. The only thing stopping us from doing it is those who are standing in our way, and we can't let them. You can't let the obstacles before you prevent you from moving forward. The fate of our species depends on it. It's time to go.
He is the founder and primary writer of Starts With a Bang. He is Busted Pencil's own astrophysicist, and he is Ethan Siegel. And Ethan, you did it again, man. You busted pencils.
Well, it's my pleasure to do it. When they need busting, you know who to call.
Gotta love Ethan. We will get him back for sure. Badass teacher and author Steven Singer joins us now to take on that famous Alfie Cohn question. What are the schools our children deserve?
The schools our children deserve are the schools that individualize their learning and do not standardize their assessments. The schools that treat them as individuals and that let them be creative and that connect to their lives and that treat them as human beings and not cogs in the machine.
Time now for our salute to historian and activist Howard Zinn. Here is your moment of Zinn.
It's a strange thing. We think that law brings order. Law doesn't. How do we know that law does not bring order? Look around us. We live under the rule of law. Notice how much order we have?
My thanks to most of the guests today, Ethan Siegel, Steven Singer, Anna Moffat, and Paul Thomas. Double E, not so much. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.